what we did in the previous week, is that we spoke about Tahara, purification, and we also touched on the five different types of water, or five different types of liquids, and each having different hukum and effect. First one, we spoke about Tahir Mutahir Ghayru Makruh. Second was Tahir Mutahir Makruh. Third was Tahir Ghayru Mutahir. Fourth is Ma'ul Najas. And the fifth one is Ma'ul Mashkur Kun Fi Tahuriyatihi. Just a reminder again, Tahir Mutahir Ghayru Makruh is that liquid which is pure and will be able to purify, and it is in any way detectable. Ghayr makruh, it is not undisliked. And that was ma'ul mutlaq, water which is unconditional, meaning it doesn't have to be understood by saying another condition to it to understand what it is. Like, for example, rose water. Now, rose water is a conditional liquid. And water, even though the name in it has water, but to explain it fully, one has to say rose. Rose water. Hence, that is conditional. So, if any liquid, when it's being described, a condition or another attachment has to be there, then that won't be classified as a water which is water that is unconditional. So, we explain all the different types of water, rain water, well water, river water, sea water. And even though this is not restrictive, this is just give an example. And there are many other different types of water, like we spoke about the geysers that come out of the ground, hot geysers. We also spoke about the spring water that comes down, and etc. Now, as it said, that such water may be used for purification as long as it remains purifying, namely to remain with its natural characteristics, with nothing having mixed with it, such as to change its condition, thereby removing its purifying quality. Now, sometimes, if the purifying quality goes, then that water cannot be used for cleaning from ritual impurity, which is like wudu and ghusl. Now, if any water happens, something not just falls inside, something impure, something which is classified as dirt in terms of Sharia, then if that water is ma'ul qaleel, classified as less water. Now, what is ma'ul qaleel? If you look at the third text and paragraph, it says ma'ul qaleel is anything which is below 10 cubits of water. 10 by 10 cubits of water. Now, can anyone tell me what a cubit is? General knowledge?
6 square feet.
Not really. Just one of these. I think we'll have tried to read before they come in.
Cubit.
Cubit.
the volume?
It's emerging. The name of a particular measurement, and normally it's referred to in the Islamic text as Zira' al-Jibas. Now, if you look in maybe in Wikipedia or any, just type in Ask Allama Google, it'll probably tell you what it is. 18 inches, equivalent of 45.72 centimeters, that is a cubit. Now, the reason why we say 18 inches, because cubit is really a name for a particular a measurement. Now, there were different types of cubits that were used throughout history. The Romans used one type of measurement. You had the Persians. They were using one type of measurement. And the type of measurement that we use in this country is the yard, that's a cubit as well, and that's 90 centimeters, 3 feet. So the cubit that we're talking about here is the cubit that it was used at the time, in the Islamic times. Now, that is called Zira'ul Kirbas. Zira' is the name of a measurement, and it's usually named after because the measurement been taken from the measurement of the hand. The measurement of the hand. That's why you call it Zira' as well. Now, at that time, there were two types of measurement being used. One is Zira' al-Kirbas, one is Zira' al-Masaha. Zira' al-Kirbas is the measurement that were used to measure cloth. That's why it's called kirbas. It's one particular type of cloth. And there's one dira'ul misar masaha. It's a unit of, it's a particular measurement that is used to measure land and etc. Now, there is a debate within the scholars as to which one is being referred here. Which cubit? Now, the dira'ul kirbas, it's 18 inches, which is 1.5 feet. As you put it into centimeters, it's 45.72 centimeters. But if you go to Zira' al-Masaha, that is 36 inches. 36 inches, which is how many yards? Anybody knows? How many inches in a foot?
3 yards.
36. 12 times 3, 36. I'm not that good in math, but I know a little bit. So there's a debate within the scholars as to which zira is mentioned or which zira is fixed for this. Now, because Zira' al-Masaha is 36 inches, and that is quite long, and at that time, Zira' al-Kirbas, which is the short one, was the one that majority of the public knew about and used at that time. So there are two reasons why the ulama came to the conclusion that this one is the best, is because even though they used the word Zira', but they didn't mention which one it was, but because that was the one that was particularly used by the people, which is Zira' al-Kirbas, the 18 inches, and secondly, because that is a shorter measurement. If you go for the longer one, that means there has to be a bigger surface, a bigger... Hence, it will make it more difficult, especially for the Arabs, where water is scarce and water is shortage. The bigger surface, the bigger amount you make, will mean that even a small quantity of najasat or impurity falls in, will make the oil impure, which will increase anxiety or increase difficulty for the people of that time, mainly the Arabs. As we all know, it's a desert land, a very scarce water is there. So that is why the ulama has said that the zira'ah that is mentioned in the kitab and mentioned by the ulama, it has to be zira'ah kirbat. Are we clear? So that is the zira'ah that is mentioned here. So it's saying that if the water is less than 10 cubits, 10 by 10 cubits, which if you work it out in yards, okay, so you got 1.5 yards times by 10 is 15, so 15 yards by 15 yards. If it's less than that, then that will be classified as ma'ul qaleel, meaning less water. So anything that falls inside, anything najas, anything which is impure, anything which is classified as nafar, falls inside, that will render the water nafar. That will render the water impure. Number one. Number two things can fall into a ma'un qaleel, water which is less. Okay, I'm going to say ma'un qaleel now. I'm not going to keep on saying, explaining what ma'un qaleel is. So I'm giving you the term, let's hope you can click onto it, because it saves me time as well. Okay? So now, there are two types of things that can fall into ma'un qaleel. One is liquid, and the other is solid. If it's a solid, again, it can be distributed into two. One is something that is being used to enhance the purifying quality or not. Sometimes you put soap in there or something from some sort of maybe leaves or something they used back in the home, back in the days, so that it can clean more. So if it's to enhance the cleaning effect, then so long it doesn't take the water out of its thinness and its flowingness, then that water will still be classified as ma'un mutahir ghayr makruh. Ma'un tahir mutahir ghayr makruh. Again, I'm using terminology now. Right, so you need to follow me. So now it's time to start grasping those terminologies. As we go along, I'm just going to keep on saying these terminologies. But every time we start explaining this, it's going to kill the time. So we've got ma'un qaleel and a solid object thing has fallen into it. And that can be divided into two categories. Either that solid item that has been dropped into that water is either being used to enhance the purifying effect, enhance the nazafat, the cleaning effect of it, so that it can clean better. That's why back in the day, when they would wash a dead body, when they would throw it into a hot water, sometimes usnan and these kind of things, you get special, they used to use special types of leaves. I don't know what the leaves were called. In Arabic, you call it silt. I don't know what the actual. It's just come out, it's really good. It's some special leaves they would use. The Arabs would put it into the water, boil the water, and then they would use that water to clean the dead body. Okay? As we all know, to wash the dead body. It's followed. You've got to wash it. Now, if it's not ma'un mutahir, if it's not water that can be purified, then obviously they wouldn't have done that. So that goes to show that it's permissible. So if a solid object falls into ma'un qaleel, So long the rikah and saylan. Rikah means the thinness. The water is not become thick. The thinness of the water. And saylan means the flowingness. This is the quality of the water. The quality of the water, it's not thick, it's thin. And saylan means it is flowing. So long you maintain these two qualities in the water, then that water will still be classified as ma'un tahirun mutahir ghayr makruh. Yeah? If by boiling that water with that item and taking it to such an extent that these two qualities are now lost, then that water cannot be used for cleaning. The water is pure, but it cannot be used to clean from impurity. If that item, that solid item that's important to the water, is not being used to enhance the cleaning effect. So for example, I have water here, a tub of water, and I drop some chenek, if I boil it, by cooking it, straight away, you cannot use that water again for cleaning impurity. Impurity of the wudu and ghusl. Okay? If I don't boil it, just drop it into water. I don't cook the water. I don't boil it. Don't boil the contents. It's water which is not hot, nothing, just normal cold, natural water, and you drop some peas into it. So long these two qualities are maintained, rikka, which is the thinness, saylan, which is the flowingness, is maintained, then that water still can be used for cleaning ritual impurity. Okay. So I classify the thing that you can drop it into ma'ul qalil is two things. One is solid, one is liquid. I'll explain the solid now. Let's go to liquid now. Liquid. Now, there are many types of liquid. Okay. Every liquid can have three qualities. Lawnun, color. Ra'iha, smell. And the other one is taste. Zuk. Every liquid has three qualities. It can have these three qualities. Some liquids might not have these three qualities. It might just have one quality or two qualities. Yeah? Majority of the liquids. So there are liquids where you don't have any of these three. Any of these three. Water is a liquid that obviously doesn't have these three. So any liquid that you throw in, if it has, say for example, two qualities, like it has a smell and it has taste, if one of the two qualities appear into the water, then that water will no longer be ma'un tahir mutahir ghayr makruh. If the liquid that's been dropped into the water has three qualities, for example, vinegar. Vinegar has color, has taste, has smell. Yeah? So if I was to drop vinegar into the water, if out of the three qualities, two qualities appear in the water, then that water will no longer be ma'un tahir mutahir ghayr makruh. So, to make it easy, there are two types of liquids. I'm not talking about water now. Forget about water. Water is colorless, odorless, everything. It has nothing. We're talking about liquids that you put into the water. They all either have any of these three, or we'll have nothing. I've just explained the liquids that can have some sort of quality. So you can either have one, two, or three. One quality would be, for example, rose water. Rose water, it looks like water, but it has a smell to it. Okay? It doesn't really have a color. If you drop some more rose water into the water, you won't be able to tell that the color changed. It doesn't really have a color to it. Okay? So you put some rose water into the water. So it doesn't have a color. Okay? And obviously, it doesn't have a taste. It has a smell. If the smell starts to appear in the water, again, that will make that ma'un very mutahir. It will be pure, but it will no longer be purified. It will not purify from ritual impurity. Now, if it's water, if it's liquid that doesn't have any quality, now you're going to say, what kind of water, what kind of liquid is that then? It doesn't have any quality. Ma'un mustamal. Water that's already been used to remove ritual impurity. So you've done wudu, somehow you collected that water. That water as well. Now that has no quality, because it's like water. But it's already been used for removing ritual impurity. Now, what would happen then? If you have water that's not been used for wudu and ghusl, and you have water that has been used, and somehow it got mixed. Right. And normally in this country you won't bother just get fresh water, it's plenty of water. What about the UN desert or something? You've really got very little water. What do you do? Then you would measure. You would weigh up. If the water that has been used already is less in quantity than the water that has not been used, then the water that has not been used will take precedence over the water that has been used. Okay? So am I clear with that? So that's all that. And then, so I've explained how tahir, mutahir, ghayr makruh will become, will lose its quality of mutahir, or purify from ritual impurity. And then we have Tahir Mutahir Makruh. Tahir Mutahir Makruh. That water which is pure and purifying, but it is detestable. Meaning it is disliked. When you have water which is not this category, then to use this water is detestable. But if you don't have any other water other than this particular water, then it does not become detestable because you have no taste, expected to use this. So for example, if it's water that being drunk, the leftover water of a cat, for example. A cat drank from it. Yes? This type of water will become makruh, disliked, when the prevalence of other water is there. Then you have tahir ghayr mutahir, which I explained. Any water which is does not have the purifying effect. And within that category, all pure liquids will come to this. Anything that is pure, any liquid that is pure, will be classified as tahir, ghayr mutahir. The reason why I'm saying this is because anything that comes under this category will be enough to remove that impurity which can be seen by the naked eye, or the real impurity, the haqiqi, the real impurity, the one that we can see. You can use any water or any liquid from this category to remove that. So for example, you have a plate and there's some impurity on it. Okay? And if somebody had some water or liquid, any other liquid, and we use that to clean the plate will become clean, even though he's not using water. So this is why I explained that. Then you have ma'un najas, again, I explained that. And ma'un mashkukun fi tahuriyatihi, and that water which is doubtful in its purifying effect. And I explained that last week, is that water which is the leftover of some specific donkey which has got from it. The leftover from that water will be classified under this. And also another category of a condition of ma'un qalil is that if it's not enough deep enough, meaning if a person scoops out of the water and it touches the ground, that is one of the conditions of ma'un qalil. So if these two conditions are not found, meaning it's more than 10 by 10, and when you scoop up the water, you don't touch the ground, then that will be classified as ma'un qalil, a lot of water. Hence, if anything falls into that, ma'un qalil, any najas, then it would not become impure, because the fact that it's become very clean. Ablution, wudu. Wudu, what does wudu mean? Literally, wudu means to purify and to become more beautiful. When a person does wudu, he becomes purified and he becomes much more cleaner. And obviously, in the day of judgment, his light will be shining, radiant. His face will be shining. And in Sharia, it means nazafatul maqsusa, a special way of cleaning oneself. The obligatory integral forms of wudu are four. Now there are four forms of wudu. Before I go into that, what is farz? The definition of farz is ma thabata bi dalil qat'iy mujib lil ilm al badi. That proof, or should I say, that injunction which has been established by a proof which has no element of doubt. And on hearing it, you understand it fully without any need of clarification. That is the farz. The legal definition of farz is that injunction which has been established by a proof which has no element of doubt and which gives the knowledge without any element of clarification. Doesn't mean any clarification. Anything like that is followed, which means one has not only has to do it, but if he denies that, he becomes a kafir. If he denies it, he becomes a kafir. Look for a jahiduha. A person who denies it will become a kafir. Because he has denied the word of Allah, even if it's the saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, all saying the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is from Allah. Allah yantiku anil hawa, in huwa illa wahyu yuha. The Quran says that Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam never spoke from his own wills and desires. Whatever he said was a revelation that was given to him. So it's either directly or indirectly. Okay, directly is the words of Allah, and indirectly is the sayings of Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So if it's been proven, which has not an element of doubt, then that would be false. Obviously I can break that up more, But if I keep doing that, then we'll be stuck in evolution for maybe another 2 weeks. So that was Farz. Wajib. Okay. I'll explain wajib as well. What is wajib? Wajib. There's two types of wajib. What I mean by two types of wajib, I'll explain. First of all, wajib is that injunction which has been proven or established by a proof which has a little element of doubt, or it has been established by a proof which hasn't got element of doubt, but needs clarification. I'm not that clear. Maybe that is clarification as well. Okay. Quran. The four main categories, the four main dalils, the four main proofs that are used to extract the injunctions. One is the Quran. Number two is Hadith. Number three is Ijma'. Number four is Qiyas. Quran, you all understand. Hadith, saying the Prophet. And related to that is also what the Sahabas have said and done. And also part of that. Ijma', consensus of the ulama. Qiyas, analogy. These are the four ways of extracting injunctions. The Quran, we all know, it is a proof which has no doubt. Does anybody doubt? No. If anybody doubts that, he's got a problem. So, has no doubt. So any proof that has no doubt and clear in its meaning, meaning it doesn't need any clarification, any injunction deriving from that will be false. Now if any of these clauses are removed, it will then go to a lesser degree. Wajib is something which has been established, and hukum, an injunction which has been established, either through a proof which has no element of doubt but needs clarification. Or it has been established through a proof which has a slight element of doubt. Is that made clear now? Now, what has element of doubt? Anything which has not, any proof which has not reached the status of mutawatir. Again, these are all these technical terms. But that's not explaining one of them. It's just going to carry on and carry on and carry on. Make it short, that if it has an element of doubt, right, maybe another time we'll explain that, okay, let me try to get something done, and then you only can fire a question after me, and I'll probably explain it then. So if it's got an element of doubt, then any injunction arriving from such proof which has an element of doubt will become wajib. Hence, if anybody refused such thing, he would not be a kafir. He will not become an infidel, but he will be classified as a fasik, a big sinner. Is that clear? That is the difference. Both of them you have to do. Farz you have to do, wajib you have to do. The only difference is that a farz, if anybody refused a farz, he will be classified as a kafir. Anybody who refused a wajib will not be classified as a kafir, but will be classified as a fasik. The four farz, number one, washing the face, whose lengthwise demarcation is from the top of the forehead to the bottom of the chin for someone without a thick beard, or for one with a thick beard to the bottom of the beard that lies on the face as opposed to the hair that hangs below the chin. Its demarcation in width is from one earlobe to the other, even for someone with a beard. So, the boundary, demarcation. The boundary of washing. It's saying lengthwise. From the top of the forehead, where the hair normally stops. Now, for example, somebody's got hairs, doesn't have a hair, like me. Okay? What happens then? Then, where normally what people would assume as forehead. Understand? One, my father told me a little joke. He said, one child, and his father goes to him, "Can you rub my forehead with this cream?" Because, "Daddy, you don't have forehead. All your head is head. There is no forehead. Where's the forehead?" He has no hair on his head. Because everything is head. So at the moment, mine is probably like that as well now. So if somebody doesn't have hair, then what would normally be assumed as the forehead and what would normally be assumed as the head, from that point, you would wash the face. But if somebody's got hair, he's very fortunate to have still have it left. Then, from the place where his hair begins, okay, to the bottom of the chin, for someone without a thick beard, from the bottom to the bottom of the chin, that is the lengthwise. And from the width, from one earlobe to the other, okay, this would be classified as the face. Now, if somebody has a thick beard, obviously all this face has need to be washed. But if somebody has a thick beard, then it will be difficult for that part of the face to be washed. So what's the ruling for him? It says, to the bottom of the beard that lies on the face. That part of the beard that lies on the face, not that which hangs below, further than the face. Mustansara. So this is hanging from the face. So not this part. Another way, if you want to go like this, any beard that's on the face needs to be washed. But you don't need to get to the roots of that. Because it's thick. And Ad-Din Yusra, Deen has been made very easy. Prophet Allah's Deen was very thick. So if you want to go like this, yes? So any beard on the face, you need to wash the top part of it. But if it's thin, can easily be seen, then you have to make sure that the water reaches the skin. Yeah? But if it's thick, just go like this. So what that means is that this part which is hanging down doesn't need to be washed. It's not part of the fall. Only that part of the beard which is actually on the face, not which is hanging on the face. So that lies on the face as opposed to the hair that hangs below the chin. Also, when you wash in the face, even the sides, as those who have beards, who are blessed with having a beard, should I say. That doesn't mean that, obviously, you only expect yourself for that. That part which doesn't have anything. So from the beard to the actual hairline, there's a little part which is gone. It's clean. Yeah? That part also needs to be washed. That part also needs to be washed. So this is the fault. So to wash this once is fault. And has to be done. If anybody omits that, then his wudu will be incomplete. Hence, if he reads salah with such wudu like that, then his salah will not be accepted. Number two, washing the two arms up to and including the elbows. So washing the whole arm, including the elbows. The reason why they include the elbows, according to Imam Shafi'i, the elbows is not included. The elbows, so we might think is the norm. Take it for granted, you're always washing. But that's what I was being taught. But there's a reason why it's been mentioned is because, according to the other school of thought, it is not. Right? And again, it's all based upon the usul, upon the rules of understanding. That's another topic for another day. Number three, wiping a fork of the head. Anything above the ears is classified as the head. Washing one fourth of that is fard. Washing one fourth of that is the fard. Now, this is a classical example of wajib. So you don't say, how's that wajib? It's a fard, isn't it? The masaha, doing masah, wiping wet hand or wiping wet, something wet over something is called masah. In our definition, إصابة بلد لم يستعمل في غيره باليد أو بغيره. That to touch or use something which is wet and has not been used before, either through hand or through something else, that is called masaha. So for example, if I was to get a block of ice right on my head, my masaha would be done. Obviously, maybe if you're feeling too hot, then you might close your eyes, but generally you won't do that. But I'm just saying, if somebody was to do that, get a block of ice, rub it around his head, then that would be masaha. Yeah, your brain is storming a lot and been cooking too much at home. So, or fighting with the wife, in your case. And but brain is boiling. That's a good way of cooling down. So using, that's what you call masaha. Using to get the wetness onto something, either through hand or through any other object, like block of ice or something. Now, I'll just explain. It says in the Quran, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا قُمْتُمْ إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ فَاغْسِلُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ إِلَى مَرَافِقِكُمْ وَامْسَحُوا بِرُءُوسِكُمْ. Now, it's talked about the masah, that to do masah on the head. That itself is fard. If anybody says masah is not fard, then he'll be negating the Quran and he'll be kafir. But the clarification of masah, and what constitutes to be masah, there is a difference of opinion. Now that is wajib. According to Imam Abu Hanifa, he says to do a quarter will constitute as masah. According to Imam Shafi'i rahimahullah, he said washing one or two hairs is enough. That will constitute as masah. So there's a difference of understanding, there's different clarification of masah, but the actual masah itself is fard. So that is wajib. One quarter is wajib. So what I was saying before is that any injunction which has been established by a proof which has no doubt but needs clarification, then that will be classified as wajib. Yeah, so there's an example of it here. I hope some of you guys are writing. So if you guys, mashallah, have got computer memory, then maybe that's fine. But, you know, a lot of this stuff you're not going to find anywhere else. The reason why, because some of it is my own. Might not be that good, but it'll make you understand something. Okay. Fourth one. Washing the 2 feet up to and including the ankles. Again, including the ankles, we mentioned the reason why is because according to Imam Shafi'i rahimahullah, the ankle is not included. The ankle is not included. Even though we take it for granted, we do it naturally, because we've been taught like this. But this is why they've actually said it. If we were to say to wash up the ankles, a bit, majority will understand that with ankles. But the reason why specifically mentioning including the ankles is because according to the other school of thought, it's not, that's not necessary. Okay, so Charlie, you guys up for it? Yeah? What's the budget? Okay, let's tell you a bit more and I'll give you a break. About the emphasized sunnah of wudu. Emphasized sunnah. What is classified as emphasized sunnah? Sunnah literally means a path. Sunnah literally means a path. So you can have a bad path, you can have a good path, any path. That's why it says in the hadith, مَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً حَسَنَةً مَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً سَيِّئَةً فَلَهُ وِزْرُهَا وَوِزْرُ مَنْ عَمِلَ بِهَا وَمَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً سَيِّئَةً حَسَنَةً فَلَهُ أَجْرُهَا وَأَجْرُ مَنْ عَمِلَ بِهَا Whoever set a bad path, then he will get the sin, and whoever acts upon that bad path, all that sin will be offered him. وَمَنْ سَنَّ سُنَّةً حَسَنَةً Whoever sets a good path, then he will get the reward of that, and whoever follows upon that path will get the reward of that. So the sunnah itself means a path. But here, technically, it's talking about sunnah al-tariqah al-masluka fi al-din ala sabil al-muwadaba, that path which is used in deen and which is the path of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and the path of the Sahaba. And the path of the Sahaba. Because Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said himself, عليكم بسنتي وسنة الخلفاء الراشدين المهديين, that you must hold strongly to my sunnah and to the sunnah of the Khulafa al-Rashidin, to the sunnah of the five Khulafa. So, to follow the Sahaba is also classified within the sunnah. Now, if that sunnah has been practiced with Mawadaba continuously, and only now then has been left out, either through mercy, what I mean by mercy, the Prophet purposely left it out once or twice so that it does not become obligatory for the Ummah. It's Qasr lil'alameen, Prophet was the blessing for mankind. And he knew that my Ummah will not be able to do it. So now and then he would drop it. Why? Not because he couldn't do it, but for the benefit of the Ummah, for the easiness of the Ummah, for making it easy and blessing for the Ummah. Otherwise, if he continuously did it, then that would become wajib. It would become compulsory for us. So, Sunnah al-Mu'akkada, the emphasized Sunnah, which is the Arabic term, is Sunnah al-Mu'akkada, is that Sunnah which Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did continuously, لكن ترك أحيانا, but he sometimes left it out. Sometimes left it out. That sunnah is called sunnah al-mu'akkada. And those who omit, who neglect this sunnah, they will not get the shafa'ah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. من ترك سنتي لم ينل شفاعتي. Those who neglect my sunnah, they will not get my intercession in Yawm al-Qiyamah. And the intercession is for who? Intercession is for the sinners. So we are all in need of the intercession of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So if we want to guarantee that we get the intercession, then we, at all costs, our endeavors should be in fulfilling the sunnah of Mu'akkada. So, among the emphasized sunnah of wudu are the following. The intention. What does that mean? Intention. And you're going to say, every time I go to the tap, I intend to do wudu, that's why I'm at the tap. Why am I at the tap? I'm not just wandering around and suddenly I'm in front of the tap. I'm going there to do wudu. So obviously the intention is there. Unless I'm being remote controlled by somebody else. Then you end up there. So the intention is this. What does that mean? What it means is that wudu can be done without intention. Wudu can be done without intention. Now you're going to say, how is that done then? If I was to throw him into the water, into the river, and then he can't swim, he starts drowning, all his head, everything gets wet. So according to Imam Hanifa, his wudu is done. If all those four parts get washed, even though did he have intention? I touched him into the water, he didn't have no intention. Or did he have intention? So he fell into the water, all his four organs got soaked. Unintentionally, his wudu is done. But he won't get any reward for it, because he didn't intend to do that. So that is why he's saying that to do intention. Otherwise, he doesn't. Hang on a minute, but I got wudu, is there, I'm doing this, come on to wudu. According to Imam Shafi'i, rahimahullah, if you don't do intention, then your wudu is not done. I'm not going to go into the proofs now, because, again, prolong it. So to make intention that I am doing wudu to remove hadath, to remove ritual impurity, or I'm doing it to get extra thawab, or I'm doing it so that I can do certain things, touch the Quran or something. With that type of intention, if you do it, you'll get the reward of doing wudu. That's the intention you need. And once you've done the intention, and wudu is done, so what happens to that water? That water then becomes ma musta'mal, used water. So if it's done with the intention of reward, so you have other branches. So if, for example, I was going to wash my hands to eat. Before eating, get filled up to wash the hands. Yeah? Now, to wash the hand for sunnah is an act of reward. Hence, any water that's been used at that time has become used water. Hence, you can't use that same water again to do wudu. Because that water has been used for reward. If it's been used to cool yourself, then that's not for act of reward. Hence, that water, if you collect it, use it for wudu, it'll be permissible. Yeah? There's many other ones. Let's turn next one. Using the toothstick. Right at the beginning, when you're doing wudu, to use the miswak is the sunnah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, لولا أن أشق على أمتي لأمرتهم بالسواك عند كل وضوء. That if it wasn't for the fear that I would make it difficult for the ummah, then I would have ordered them to do miswak at every wudu. So to do miswak is a great reward. Not only that, if a person does it at the time of wudu, then the reward of his salah will be increased by 70 times. Finished? Okay. Sorry. Question and answer.
Can you just put pressure on
the The sunnah will only be achieved if you have the miswak and use the miswak. But if for some reason the miswak is not there, maybe you lost it, or you left it at home, you come to workplace, you come to whatever, you don't have the miswak, then you can use your hand. You can use your hand and you will still get the same reward.
When you're talking about water, you mentioned this question goes into water. If it was like, was that like soap or like bath soap and this kind of thing, would that be like
if it's any soap that we've been put in to increase the cleanliness. That's right. Like I mentioned at the beginning.
Even if the density and the quantity of the water changes, like you know, trouble bath and that changes the colour and the thickness.
If the colour If the color, the smell, and the taste changes, not a problem, as long as the rikka and the saylan, the thinness and the flawiness is maintained, doesn't matter. If it's being used to increase the cleanliness. Is there any question from the list, please?
As you mentioned earlier, if somebody died in the sea,
yeah,
and cannot, his wudu is done. The same way when we take shower, but we don't need wudu after that.
No, you don't need to do wudu after that, because all that part is already washed. But to do wudu before, that's the sunnah in itself, in its own right.
You don't get the idea of doing the... You don't get the du'a.
But if you do the ghusl and according to the sunnah, then you get the full reward. And part of the sunnah is to do wudu at the beginning of the ghusl. But we're not talking about ghusl here, so let's take the... When the ghusl comes, then you can fire away, yeah?
Is that sunnah muqadda? Is that compulsory?
Sunnah muqadda. Emphasize sunnah. Yes, it's an emphasized sunnah.
Because we don't use it,
if you continuously neglect it, then you will get a sin.
What about, here's the liquid, for example, shower gel. That's a liquid. And you said that if two of the qualities, meaning the color and the taste, or the color or the smell, appears in the water, would that still, you said it's still used for enhancing cleanliness?
If it's a liquid, then no.
It's only for solid.
But if it's liquid, it completely goes into the water, it changes the water. Where solid stuff doesn't really...
You know, Mr. Miswak, what about if it's a different thing in terms of, like, you come up with, they use, like, maybe if I sound, they use, like, another type of cream.
Any type of tree can be used in the swap. Obviously, it's the preference of what type to use, but that will all classify as the swap.
Toothpaste
is not a sunnah. Again, that's using a toothbrush when you have miswak won't be a sunnah. Because if you didn't have a miswak and you use a toothbrush, then you can rewrite with the right intention you get it. But that doesn't mean that I can never get a miswak. I've got a toothbrush. No. It's like itself in its own right, it's a similar we should offer. No question
from this?
The right one now.
Probably need some more energy.
What is exactly plastic?
Plastic means a filler, not concealer.
Do you know when you talk about doubt, truth does not reach the stage of Mudahib? What's that mean, Mudahib?
So,
we talk about doubt. Without seven doubts, he said, proof has not reached the stage of mutahid.
Mutahid?
Mutawatir.
Oh,
mutawatir.
Mutawatir means a proof which has reached a state where no element of doubt can be left. What that means, in every era, every particular time, every time, there was enough people mentioning that one's own intellect can never negate that. So, for example, somebody wants to say, for example, a person who's never seen Sri Lanka before. He says, 100 people in England, 100 people in America, 100 people in Japan, so many people, all different times, and throughout the ages, everybody's saying, Sri Lanka exists, Sri Lanka exists. Even if he's never seen it, he's going to believe it. There's no way he can negate that. Because everybody, from every single place, there's no way that all these people can get together, okay, especially back in those days, never had no mobile, never had those technologies. And everybody in every ages, in every time, so many people are saying the same thing. There's no way that can be an element down. So the Quran has reached that stage. And there are hadiths, some hadiths which have reached that stage. Where from the time of Prophet until now, obviously every hadith now is all recorded. But until it was recorded, so many people saying it from different places and different people, black, white, blue, whatever, all were saying the same thing. So that's why there was no element of doubt.
Yeah. When you say the four proofs between the Quran, Hadith, Ijma, and
Ijma.
Ijma, and Qiyas, would these Hadiths, obviously there's thousands and thousands of Hadiths, it must be the authentic, right? In terms of from the proof, when you're saying the proof, it must be no one which contradicts the Quran or contradicts other commentaries. So.
The first Hadith is so vast itself.
Yeah.
Authentic is one thing, and the Hadith reaching the state of mutawatir is a different thing. We have many ahadith which are sahih, authentic, but they have not reached the status of mutawatir. Okay? So they still have an ilm al-dawah. Send a question. In connection with intentions, what about the hadith about actions are judged on intentions? Now, what we are referring here is about, first of all, we said that make intention is sunnah al-muakkada, meaning that saying that doing the intention is not fard, but sunnah al-muakkada, hence, if you do it, you will get the reward. Yeah? You will get the reward. Now, actions are done on intentions is not really related to this. Because that means, what this is saying, that what was your reason, what was your purpose behind it to me? If you had the right purpose, then you'll get reward. If you had the wrong purpose, then you won't get reward. Here we are saying, if somebody doesn't do the intention, would his wudu be done or not? There's two different things we're talking about here. Somebody may be doing wudu, well, I can't see any other reason why they would do wudu apart from cooking. Okay. But if these four parts was washed without intention, the wudu would be done still, but you will get no reward. So that's what we were kind of talking about. So that is really, the remit of that is quite different from what we were talking about.
Is that because if you have the intention to do wudu, and then you have the intention to fulfill the command of Allah, and then you get the reward for it.
But that's
if you have the intention, you just set the reward or something.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. If you have the intention, then the reward is there. It's because you're doing it. You're doing it intentionally, which means you're doing it for ibadah. Anything which is done as ibadah will be rewarded. But again, you have to do it for the sake of Allah's will. Can you please repeat the ahadith of Rasulullah about following the sunnah of the companions so we can write it down in Arabic? عليكم بسنتي وسنة الخلفاء الراشدين المهديين عضوها عليها بالنواجذ. That is the hadith. And also please repeat the hadith. من ترك سنتي لم ينل شفاعتي. You said water used for cooling can then be used for wudu because the intention for wudu was not there. Please clarify. If somebody takes a bath, not for intention of ritual impurity, or removing ritual impurities, but he's doing it to cool himself. It's hot weather, just loads of water on himself. Probably, I don't know if he's ever been for anybody, and it's really hot, you go into the thing and you just clean. Now, that water, if it's been collected, you can use that water again for wudu or ghusl. Because that water has not become ma'un mustamal, meaning the technical used water. Obviously that water's been used, but not for that category. So I hope that's cleared up. He says anything can fall in Ma'un Qatir. I will remain purified. Because if small quantity of najasa falls into it, a small quantity of najasa falls into Ma'un Qatir, his water, then it will not make it impure. It will not make it impure. As so long, there's no changes in the water. But his mom coming in, his left water, even one drop of najasat, one drop of impurity falls in, that's the finish. There's no need for the changes of the fish. Even if you can't smell it, it still be classified as ma'un najas, impure water. But if it's ma'un kathir and a single drop of najasa falls in, then it will still classify as pure so long that there's no changes within the quality of the water. Any other questions?
If someone has a doubt, that's probably change the quality of water. Even though.
How would you have a doubt? You can't smell it, you can taste it, you can see it.
Looks probably.
If you can see the color change, then it's not wrong.
You know, if someone uses cooking and the four parts are washed, he doesn't have intention of doing wudu, but his wudu is done, then wouldn't that water be in man's style?
No.
Only if he has intention, then he will.
I want to ask, you know when people sit in a bathtub to make water, is that permissible? Because once it is water, using the same dirty water to clean yourself, or are you supposed to run a tap and bath like that?
Well, if you're going to do a bath, if it's to remove ritual impurity, then it's not advisable to do that. Okay. Otherwise, that and yeah. Thing a part of, yeah. Don't have to mention, but okay.